Although every word of this story is as true as despair, I do not expect people to believe it. Nowadays, a rational explanation is required before belief is possible. Let me at once then offer the rational explanation. It is held that Harry and Laura Innes were under a delusion on that 31st of October, and that this supposition places the whole matter on a satisfactory and believable basis. But there were three who took part in the events of the 31st. The other man still lives and can speak to the truth of the least credible part of Harry's story. October the 31st. It began like any other last day of the month and progressed into terror as it moved beyond midnight.
I never in my life knew what it was like to have enough money to satisfy the most ordinary needs. I used to paint in those days, and Laura used to write, and we felt sure we could keep the pot at least simmering. Living in town was out of the question, so we went to look for a cottage in the country. We wanted something that was both sanitary and picturesque. So rarely do these two qualities meet in one cottage that for a long time our search was fruitless. We were lucky in the end, though. 2 days before our honeymoon started, we discovered the ideal thing on the outskirts of the village of Brenzett, near the marshes. We got a tall, old village woman called Mrs. Dorman to do for us, and as the cottage slowly became habitable, we began to devote more of our time to earning a living. Laura began to sell her stories, and I really felt the atmosphere was helping my painting. We had 3 months of married happiness. One October evening, I'd been down to smoke a pipe with the village doctor. Laura had stayed at home to finish a comic sketch for a woman's magazine. I'd left her laughing over her own jokes. I came back to find her crying on the window seat in the light of the dying day. Darling, what is it? Please, darling.
It's Mrs. Dorman.
What? What's she done?
She says she's got to go before the end of the month. She says her niece is ill. She's gone down to see her now, but I don't believe that's the reason. Her niece is always ill. I think someone's been saying something against us. She was acting so queerly.
Oh, come on, darling, never mind. It's all right. Don't cry.
But don't you see? It's serious. We'll have to work all day. We'll only be able to rest while we're waiting for the kettle to boil. We won't have time to earn any money.
Listen. There'll be plenty of time, even if we do have to... Laura, listen to me. I'll speak to Mrs. Dorman when she comes back and see if I can't make her change her mind. She probably wants more money or something. It'll be all right, you see. Come on, love. It's a beautiful evening, not dark yet. Let's take a walk up to the church, Come on, darling, fetch your coat.
I don't need a coat. It's not cold out. Harry, I will learn to cook soon.
But... Oh, don't worry. We walked under the yew trees up to the little old church. The path was called the Beer Walk, because years before, it had been the way by which the corpses had been carried to burial. I didn't tell Laura this, though. She was impressionable. The church was Norman and was only used on Sundays. On either side of the altar lay a grey marble figure of a knight in full plate armour, lying upon a low slab, with hands held up in everlasting prayer. Their names were lost, but the villagers said they'd been murderers, marauders by land and sea. They'd been guilty of deeds so foul that the house they had lived in, the big house, by the way, that had stood on the site of our cottage, had been stricken by lightning and the vengeance of heaven. I didn't tell Laura this either. She wasn't so engrossed in folklore as I was. We walked to the chancel, looked for a while at the sleeping warriors, and then slowly made our way home. Mrs. Dorman had come back from the village, and so as soon as Laura had gone to our bedroom, I went into the kitchen to square things up with our servant. Well, can't you stay for another month?
No, sir. I'm bound to go by Thursday.
Yeah, but it's Monday today. I mean, I think you might have let us know before. There's no time now to get anybody else. My wife's not up to too much heavy work. Can't you stay till next week?
I might be able to come back next week.
Good, but why do you have to go this week? Come on, out with it.
It's cold, sir. They say, sir, that this was a big house in Catholic times, and there was many deeds done here.
Well, tell me about it, Mrs. Dorman. Well, you needn't mind about telling me. I won't make fun or anything. Would you like to sit down?
No, sir, thank you.
Well?
Well, sir, you may have seen in the church, beside the altar, two shapes.
The knights in armor. Effigies.
I mean them two bodies, drawed out man-size in marble.
Man-size in marble. I thought then that her description was 1,000 times more graphic than mine.
They do say, as on All Saints' Eve, them two bodies sit up on their slabs and gets off them, and then walks down the aisle in their marble. And as the church clock strikes 11, they walks out of the church door and over the graves and along the bier walk. And if it's a wet night, there's the marks of their feet in the morning.
And where do they go?
They come back here to their home, sir. And if anyone meets them...
Well, what then?
I'm sorry. I've got to go, sir. But my niece, she's sick. I've got to go.
It's all right, Mrs. Dorman. If you promise to come back afterwards again, we don't want to lose you. What of the knights, the legend, after they've arrived here, what are they supposed to do then?
Whatever you do, sir, lock the door early on All Saints' Eve. And make the cross sign over the doorstep and on the windows.
But has anyone ever seen these things?
That's not for me to say. I know what I know, sir.
Who was here last year at the cottage?
No one, sir. The lady has owned the house, only stayed here in summer, and she always went to London a full month afore the night. All Saints. I'm sorry to inconvenience you and your lady, but my niece is ill and I must go on Thursday.
I didn't tell Laura of the shapes that walked in their marble, partly because a legend concerning our house might trouble her, and partly, I think, from some more occult reason. I soon forgot about it myself, anyway. I was painting a portrait of Laura against the lattice window, and I couldn't think of much else.
There! Steak! Potatoes. Oh, tell me I'm learning fast. Say it's as good as Mrs. Dorman, even if it isn't.
It looks beautiful.
The painting's coming along marvellously, darling.
Mm?
There's only one thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is better than Mrs. Dorman. What's that?
I don't believe you. Harry, it's a lovely painting, but... You've made me really beautiful.
Well, you are beautiful.
I love you.
Well, if you love me, get your elbow out of my dinner. Thursday passed off pretty well. Actually, the steak was like boots, and the potatoes were hardly cooked at all. But I loved her. I loved my darling. Friday came, and it's about what happened that Friday that I'm telling you now. I'll tell my story of it as quickly as I can. Everything that happened that day is burnt into my brain. I shall not forget anything, not leave anything out. You look sad, my darling.
Yes, I think I am. Or uneasy. I didn't think I'm very well. It's not cold, is it?
What's the matter? No, not cold.
I've shivered lots of times this morning. Do you ever have presentiments of evil?
No. I shouldn't believe in them if I had.
I do. The night my father died, I knew it. He was right away in the north of Scotland. But I knew.
Harry! We haven't played the gramophone since we've been here. Oh, let's play it now. What shall we have?
She's sorted through our record collection, and she looked like a small child. I loved her then, that morning, more dearly than I've ever loved anyone in the whole of my life. It was the happiest time I've ever known, or hoped to know. The birds sang in the garden of our own home. The autumn was proving to be a mild one, and my Laura seemed gayer than ever she had been, despite her admittance to me that she thought she was not well. The music was beautiful. Laura was chatting away, and as I looked out through the windows at the mass of autumn colouring, the deep scarlet clouds slowly paled into leaden grey against a pale green sky. It was Friday, and Mrs. Dorman had gone off to look after a niece she swore was sick the day before, Thursday. I listened to the music and watched the graceful curve of my Laura's cheek. And it saddens me now, in retrospect, to remember that that day was the last time our now dusty gramophone records ever saw the light of day.
There must be millions of them in those marshes. The frogs. Harry, shall we get a little dog?
If you like.
Maybe not such a little one either. Let's have a Great Dane.
Great Dane?
Yes, so that everyone will be frightened and keep away.
Well, who do you want to keep away, for pity's sake?
People who shouldn't be here. Oh, I don't know. Burglars and things.
Well, I think any self-respecting burglar looking around this place would go away in disgust. Well, we might have something worth stealing one day, but not at the moment, my lovely. Anyway, Great Danes are awful cards.
Oh, they're not. They're huge.
Sure they are. All feet and great lolloping head. All bluff, though. Pekingese would be more likely to create a din and scare away unwanted visitors.
Anyway, shall we get a dog? Not a Dane, then. A little mongrel or something. With one eye black and one eye brown. Call it Wag or Patch.
A dog called Wag or Patch shall be delivered here by the end of the week.
Oh,
I promise.
Wonderful. I'd love a canary, too.
Well, then a canary you'll have, my darling. I'll give you anything in the world within my power. You know that.
I used to have a tortoise when I was a girl.
Are you trying to turn the place into a zoo? Oh, is my pipe bothering you?
No, of course not. What's the time?
Half past ten. All the same, I think I'll take the last of it outside for a bit.
Last of what?
My pipe. Brutal to sit in here filling the place with strong Cavendish.
Oh, I don't mind. I'll come with you.
No, sweetheart, not tonight. You're much too tired. Shan't be long. You were shivering this morning.
I'm all right now, honestly.
Get to bed. I'll have an invalid to nurse tomorrow, as well as the boots to clean.
Kiss me, then.
Come on, pussy. You're tired. Housework's been too much for you.
Harry? Oh, Harry.
Oh, Laura, my sweet love. I'll not be long out there. Just
taste of strong Cavendish. Oh, I am a bit tired.
Yes, I know.
We've been very happy today, haven't we, darling? Don't stay out too long.
I won't. What a night it was. The jagged masses of heavy dark cloud were rolling at intervals from horizon to horizon, and thin white wreaths covered the stars. Through all the rush of the cloud river, the moon swam, breasting the waves and disappearing again in darkness. I could see the church tower standing out black and grey against the sky. 11 o'clock already. My pipe was out. I looked in at the bedroom window and saw Laura half lying on her chair in front of her dressing table. My heart went out to her. I decided to take a walk up to the church. So, with a last look at my dearest wife, I left our cottage and began my walk. There must be a God, I thought to myself, and a God who was good. How otherwise could anything as sweet as Laura ever have been imagined? When I reached the church, I noticed the door was open. I blamed myself for leaving it unlatched the other night. We were the only people who ever cared to come to the church, except on Sundays. I went inside. It seems strange, perhaps, that I should have gone halfway up the aisle before I remembered, with a sudden chill, followed by as sudden a rush of self-contempt, that this was the very day and hour when, according to tradition, the shapes drawn out man-size in marble began to walk. Having remembered the legend, I decided to go and have a look at the marble knights. I thought how pleasant it would be to tell Mrs. Dorman how ridiculous her fancies were and how peacefully the marble figures slept on through the ghastly hour. With my hands in my pockets, I passed up the aisle. In the grey, dim light, the eastern end of the church looked larger than usual, and the arches above the two tombs looked larger too. And then the moon came out and showed me the reason. I stopped short and my heart gave a leap that nearly choked me. The bodies were gone! Marble slabs lay wide and bare in the moonlight that slanted through the east window. Was I mad? I passed my hand over the smooth slabs. Some joke. The figures were gone, and I was alone in the church. Or was I? And then a horror seized me, a horror indefinable and indescribable, an overwhelming certainty of supreme and accomplished calamity. Laura! 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 Oh!
Nicholas! Get out of my way!
Hey, what are you...
Hurry!
Let go! The marble figures have gone from the church. They've gone.
Oh, I'll have to give you a draft tomorrow, I see. You've been listening to old wives' tales.
I've seen the bare slabs, man. Let go!
Now, hurry, man. Listen to me, will you? Now, listen.
Are you... You gave me a scare, Doctor.
I'm going to old Palmer's place. His daughter's sick. I'll go by way of the church. Show me the bare slabs.
Well, you go if you like. I'm going home to my wife. Look, will you let go my arm?
Oh, rubbish, man. Do you think I'll permit that? Are you to go saying all your life that you've seen marble endowed with vitality? And me to go all my life saying you're a coward? No, sir, you shan't do it. Now, come on. Come on now. I'll prove to you were dreaming.
We went back to that terrible church and walked up the aisle. Walked to the marble slabs. The doctor produced matches. I admit I closed my eyes. I knew the figures would not be there.
Here they are. You see, right enough. You've been dreaming or drinking. Asking your pardon for the imputation, eh?
I opened my eyes and looked, and by the dying matchlight I saw the two shapes in marble, hands in prayer.
Blast! I burnt my fingers. Blasphemy in a church. Still, it wasn't meant. So, satisfied, Harry?
Must have been some trick of the light or something. Do you know, I was quite convinced they were gone.
I'm aware of that. You'll have to be careful of that brain of yours, my friend. Now I'm warning you.
Huh?
Hello? Something has been afoot here. His hand is broken.
What?
It's happened. See, it's broken. Maybe somebody tried to remove them.
They were both all right last time Laura and I came here.
Someone might have tried to prise them up.
That wouldn't account for my impression.
Too much painting and tobacco, and maybe indulgence in some of the hard stuff too, perhaps.
Never. Oh, look, come on, man, or my wife will be getting anxious. Oh, you come in and have a drop of whiskey with me and drink confusion to ghosts and better sense to me, won't you?
I ought to go to Palmer's, but... Well, it's late. I'll leave it till tomorrow. She's not all that sick.
Well, let's go back then.
Aye. You're getting along fine in the cottages then, Harry.
Oh, we're making do. Had a bit of a servant problem.
Who doesn't have servant troubles? You're not alone there, Harry. Ever since the day I came to the place, servants have driven me mad.
We walked to our cottage. We saw, as we walked up the path, the bright light streaming out of the front door. Presently, I noticed the parlor door was open, too. Had she gone out, I wondered. We passed into the parlor. It was all ablaze with candles. Her chair was empty, and her handkerchief and book lay on the floor. I turned to the window, and there, in the recess of the window, I saw her.
Laura! Good grief, man.
Laura, my baby, Laura. It's all right, my darling. I'm here.
Out of the way.
Laura, it's all right, pussy. Please, baby, I'm here. Oh, forgive me. She fell into my arms in a heap. I kissed her and held her. But I think I knew all the time that she was dead.
Please, what happened?
Her hands were tightly clenched.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
In one of them, she held something fast. When I was quite sure that she was dead and that nothing mattered at all anymore, I let the doctor open her hand to see what it was she held. It was a gray marble finger.
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.